Welcome to Ballot Battleground Nevada. I'm your host, Ben Marjot, a reporter at KRNV News 4 in Reno. I'm passionate about making politics in this critical battleground state more digestible to the average voter and pushing past the talking points to press politicians for answers. On this show, we take deep dives into the people, ideas, and debates shaping Silver State politics. While it's primary season in Nevada, it is general election mode in the race for the White House. Less than 2 weeks after President Joe Biden's State of the Union address, he's made campaign stops in the most critical battleground states: Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, and most recently Arizona, and of course, right here in Nevada. Before we get into today's interview with Nevada Secretary of State Cisco Aguilar on the voter history error, the USPS proposal, and more, we were on the ground for Biden's brief pit stop in the biggest little city. I had the awesome opportunity to tag along in the presidential motorcade as he visited a Democratic campaign office not far from the airport. Let's take you behind the scenes.
All right, linked up with my photographer, Kosik Bakta. We got our press passes. Where are we, Kosik? We're in the holding pen?
Yep, I'm in the holding pen, yep.
Okay, we got to hang out here in this dark room for another hour or so.
Yeah, another 45 minutes, yeah.
All right.
You ready?
Ready as I can be.
Okay, I'm ready.
Kosik, how many times have you filmed Air Force One?
30 years now.
How many times do you think?
Maybe about 12, 13 times.
Yeah. Was that your best shot yet?
No. There's never a best. There's always. Every time is a good shot.
Of course. Yes.
We are hustling to the motorcade. A couple of us from different news outlets here in Reno are going to hop into one of these blacked-out SUVs and head to the Democratic campaign office.
All right, we just made it to the Washoe County Democratic Party headquarters along with the White House press pool. We're expecting Biden to greet supporters, organizers, as they prepare to launch a new Biden campaign office here in Reno.
Hello! Came here because he knows that we are the swing county in the swing state. He's in the ring. He's fighting for us. He's the scrapper from Scranton, the president of the United States. Thank you.
I don't know who I'm voting for. Well, first of all, thank you, thank you, thank you. And in my house, kids rule, so don't worry, okay? No, I'm serious. And they want to let them run around, that's good by me as well. Look, the bottom line is, you think about it, all of us in this room have one fundamental difference between us and Trump. And I mean it sincerely. We have a different value set. This is a guy who said when he wouldn't go up to visit a cemetery of veterans that they're a bunch of losers and suckers. My son was one of those losers and suckers. He described the crowd as, I know you're rich as hell, but that's why I'm going to give you another big tax cut. I'm a capitalist. If you can make $1 million or $1 billion, go make it. Just pay your fair share of taxes.
Washoe County is the swingiest of swing counties and the swingiest of swing states. So the road to the White House runs right through Washoe County, right through Reno, right through that room right there.
Afterwards, he flew down to Vegas and then continued on to Phoenix. While it was his first visit to Nevada this election cycle, it will not be his last. The campaign is planning to open a campaign office in Reno soon, as well as multiple offices in southern Nevada. Now to our conversation with Cisco Aguilar, the Secretary of State, Nevada's chief elections officer. Aguilar recently had to issue an apology after a coding error mistakenly showed the people voted by mail in the presidential preference primary when in fact they had not voted. We asked him how that happened, plus why his office is fighting to stop the USPS from enacting a plan that could jeopardize whether some mail ballots are counted. Here's our interview with Secretary Aguilar. Secretary Aguilar, thank you so much for coming on Ballot Battleground Nevada today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, so you're the Democratic Secretary of State here in Nevada after winning in 2022, taking office in January of 2023. But let's start in Tucson, Arizona, where you were born, and then you went to the University of Arizona. I think the first and hopefully the last Wildcat we have on this podcast.
Thanks. You know, there's going to be an exciting opportunity potentially this Saturday to see those two schools, Nevada and Arizona, play.
Yeah, Nevada and U of A, that'll be an easy one for me. What about for you, though, as the Secretary of State of Nevada?
It's a conundrum I've been dealing with for the last, 18 hours, trying to figure out what's going to happen. Obviously, look, if the underdog can come through and pull it off and Nevada advances to the Sweet 16, that would be pretty amazing.
Go Wolfpack, as far as I'm concerned. And anytime anyone's playing U of A, rooting for that team for sure. But let's dive into the main topic of today, which is, of course, elections, which is the biggest part, certainly in an even year, the biggest part of your job as the Secretary of State. Just about a month ago, wrapping up the first presidential preference primary in Nevada since the 1980s and your first election in this role. So as far as you're concerned, from your perspective, what were the lessons learned, the takeaways from that PPP that we had about a month ago?
Yeah, and I think it's important to understand that we do have, 17 clerks throughout the state who work hard every day, who actually execute the elections. And it's important for people to understand that the elections are kind of decoupled from the state. The county clerks are the ones actually executing on the ground. They're managing that process. They're managing the actual voting systems, the tabulation of the ballots, and then that data gets sent to the Secretary of State's office. So they do an incredible job in managing their local communities to ensure people have access to the ballot box. And I'm grateful for that experience to work with them to kind of see where we need to improve processes or procedures. But also, too, it's an important thing to hopefully for the bigger counties, especially Washoe and Clark, to look at their capacity and to understand how many ballots they can process through for in order to give Nevadans the information they want on election night.
We'll get into the issue with the voter history in just a moment. But in terms of the vote tabulation and handling the volume that you were just talking about, from your perspective, was this election run pretty smoothly? Obviously, one factor, which is a bummer from democracy standpoint, is that there was lower turnout, I think less than 19% turnout statewide.
Yeah, but I think also, too, you can understand Nevada's biggest voting bloc was unable to participate in this process because they were party primaries. They weren't, the general election where everybody has the opportunity to participate. And so from a turnout perspective, when you have only, two-thirds of your voters able to participate, I think those numbers looked a little bit different. Again, you had an incumbent who was in the presidency. You've had a previous individual who served. And so it was fascinating to see, and also to managing the process with the Republican state caucus system a few days later. But from an operational standpoint, I think it was a great chance for some of our newer clerks. As you remembered, 11 of our 17 clerks are new. A couple of those individuals do have significant election management experience, but it was great for them to see how these processes work, to be able to understand them, to understand from the time a ballot is mailed to the time it's tabulated, and then releasing those results. Obviously, we tried really hard in the Secretary of State's office to streamline the data and the information on election night so that the media could have those numbers, could look at those numbers and make a few decisions. We figured out how to streamline that process even more for the June primary, and we'll get better at it for the November primary. Look, I don't want the Secretary of State's office to be an impediment on people getting information or data they want in their local counties. So we're working with those clerks to be able to get that information to the individuals in their community faster.
The faster we can get results election night, the better for us here in the media. That's not as late as we're staying up, and not as late that your election workers all across the state have to stay up tabulating results as well. But let's transition into the voter history issue, because the main snafu or hiccup, if you will, started to present itself a couple days or maybe several days after the election when people were going online to look at their voter history to verify that they either did or didn't vote in the presidential preference primary. And some people were finding out that the website claimed they did vote by mail, and in fact, they did not. So how did this happen?
Yeah, no, first of all, it happened after the votes were canvassed and approved by the local commissions in the local counties. Everything went well up until that point. And then once the commission or their county commission canvassed the vote and everything was final, that data then was transferred from the local counties up to the state level. And after that date, there were a few mishaps in the transfer of that information and that data. It had to do with a coding issue. You know, mail ballots stood for something prior to the canvas. After the canvas, that MB code stood for something different. And that's where you saw kind of the inaccurate information that was being fed up to the Secretary of State's office. We, you know, immediately when it was brought to my attention, it was a Sunday afternoon, immediately started engaging and trying to look at the data and reaching out to the local county clerks to see what was happening. And we were able to identify some of the issues pretty fast and pretty early, and we were able to get it corrected. But again, it was my goal to be as transparent as process, as make it as transparent as a process as possible, so that voters in Nevada knew what was happening and everybody started to understand. And I think we tried to be, but it was also too, you know, it was a holiday weekend. One of the vendors that serviced some of our counties was unavailable because it was a holiday weekend. And so we had to find alternative ways to be able to identify the issues and the challenges.
Just how widespread was this issue? Was it affecting voter histories in all the counties? How many people roughly maybe were affected by this?
I am not sure those exact numbers, but there were some counties who I transferred the data appropriately and gave it, you know, coded it correctly, just because they had that previous experience. And so there were different challenges in different counties, and we had to work through each county to figure out what the challenges were. And we did that. We tried to do it as fast as we can. And again, it's important to understand that this voter history is completely separate from the tabulation system. There's a reason why our elections are decentralized from a tabulation perspective. And that process was managed absolutely 100% correct by all local counties.
What would you say to voters who maybe had concerns about the election system prior to this, and those concerns have been illuminated by this issue, or just people who...
Well, I think it's important to understand, again, you have to separate the voter registration, the voter history system from the actual tabulation. It did not impact the tabulation system whatsoever. Those votes were accurate. Those numbers were correct. And so if somebody has a concern with the voter registration, understand that. But there's also, too, everybody has to understand that the tabulation system did not produce any faults or errors whatsoever. It was completely accurate and well done and well run, as it always has been in Nevada's history.
As of now, it's March 18th.
But to go back to the voter registration and the voter history systems, we are working on that with VRAMS. You know, right now, all 17 counties have their own system and their own process to process that information. And I think you saw one of the challenges of what it happens when you have 17 different systems, 17 different processes trying to be fed into one to create one accurate record. We at VRAMS will flip that because we will go to top-down voter registration. There will be one unified system throughout the state that'll make it easier on the clerks who are also doing two other jobs at the same time of trying to manage our elections, which is truly unfair when you think about it, given how important our elections processes have become. They are inundated with significant responsibility and haven't had an increase in support for what they're trying to do. And so my heart goes out to them every time we have an election because I know how hard they're working. But again, we're trying to change that dynamic. And with the VRAM system, you will see that process change significantly for the best interest of Nevada voters.
As of now, is everyone's voter history online accurate? That issue's been...
It should be. Okay. Yes, absolutely. And if it's not, it should be. Yes, absolutely.
And are you confident that in transitioning to this top-down voter registration system, which, and I'll explain it a little more in detail for our listeners, as you said, right now, every clerk and registrar in all of Nevada maintains their county-specific voter list that gets sent up to you. That's why it's called bottom-up. And essentially, we're going to be switching to top-down, where you, as the Nevada Secretary of State, the official covering statewide will maintain the statewide voter registration list that's going to be sent down to every single clerk and registrar. Am I summarizing that correctly?
Absolutely. You know, the clerks still maintain a big part of that process is they have the ability to maintain their voter rolls as we do at the state level, which will give us greater opportunity to ensure that every registered eligible voter receives an accurate ballot through the mail process. So making sure we maintain strong voter rolls is also a critical part of this process.
Are you confident that this issue will be resolved so that it won't happen again in time?
It's impossible for it to happen again because you're going from 17 different processes, 17 different systems to one unified process throughout the state.
What was your, and I know you apologized to Nevada voters after this issue happened, and we have that statement. Why don't you just share why you felt the need, obviously, to come out and apologize to voters for this issue?
Because as the Secretary of State, as the Chief Elections Officer, it's my responsibility to ensure that these systems and these processes work. And if it doesn't, it's ultimately I'm responsible for those actions and those processes. But at the same time, we were already working on a solution to the problem. And we almost were there. And unfortunately, we didn't make it there. And I have to accept responsibility for it.
Last week ended Nevada's candidate filing period. I believe over 950 candidates signing up for different races all across Nevada. What happens now, right? Because people can file challenges. Some people might be able to withdraw. This is not the final list that's going to appear on ballots in June, correct?
Right. We won't know the final list until first part of April, when the challenge period is over, and that will become the final list. You know, judicial candidates, that list is final. And we know who the judicial candidates are. They started their process January 2nd, but obviously we'll wait and see in the rest of the non-judicial candidates. It's a pretty exciting time.
What is your office doing now? Because obviously you can't print the ballots just yet, but surely you guys are starting to prepare for June.
We are. You know, UCAVA votes go out very soon. And it's always fascinating to think about how early an election process starts, especially for members of the military living overseas. So that's a big priority at this time, but it's also to ensuring the clerks have the resources to do the job we need them to do. Again, I go back to the question I asked before, is capacity, especially in Washoe and Clark. How many ballots can Washoe and Clark process per hour, knowing how many ballots they're going to receive on election day, and being able to give those results and that information to Nevada voters?
And many of those ballots presumably will be mail ballots. So it's a good segue to another issue where you've been in the news recently, which is the United States Postal Service is planning to move a distribution center that's currently in Reno, about 200 yards from our station here at News 4, relocate that to Sacramento. And so all local mail that originates here in Washoe, Carson, Lyon, Story, Douglas, a handful of northern Nevada counties will instead go to Sacramento first before being sent back here to Reno. And that includes mail ballots. What's your concern with that plan?
I think we have to look at the life and death situation that that decision process is going to make. We have so many members of our elderly community that depend on prescriptions being mailed to them through that process. You know, if they have to take that mail and process it in Sacramento, and most recently through the snowstorm that happened in northern Nevada, I-80 was closed for 3.5 days. It opened for a small period of time and then it closed again. Just think about everything that gets stuck in Sacramento when Nevadans depend and need that product, that prescription or information in real time. And that's pretty unfortunate. I think we have to look at those situations first and try to figure out what's the best interest of the community. But then again, it goes to, yes, the mail process is an important process of our universal mail ballot program. And, you know, I read about this in previous years, especially in Arizona, still having my parents live in Tucson, understanding what they went through when Tucson transferred its processing to Phoenix. That was unique because it was in a single jurisdiction, right? Tucson and Phoenix are in the same state. It's the same jurisdictional boundaries. However, this situation is a bit different because what you're doing is taking something that the state is responsible for doing, managing its elections, which is given to us by law from the federal government. Yet the federal government is implementing a process where we lose control or jurisdiction over that issue. By taking those mail ballots across state line, you're removing it from my jurisdiction. You're removing it from the jurisdiction of the Attorney General. You're removing it from the jurisdiction of Nevada law enforcement, which makes me very, very, very concerned. Look, yes, the process will be secure. It will be what it is. However, that jurisdictional question exists, and I'd like to get an answer to it. And I think it's unfair to Nevada residents to have to deal with the jurisdictional question.
What specifically is the concern with that, that it would just be more complicated to prosecute or investigate these matters with the ballots
Correct.
Going over state like, lines?
With VREMs, we'll be able to tell immediate in real time whether somebody voted by mail or they actually voted in person. So if a person shows up to a vote center but has already mailed their ballot, that system will tell the poll worker the person already voted by mail, right? So they can't vote in person. If the person votes in person, that'll trigger so that the mail ballot then gets held in a special status to be addressed. If we are having our ballots cross state lines and we need access to a specific ballot to investigate a situation, how are we going to have access when we don't have jurisdiction in California? Because again, those ballots are being tracked through technology with the U.S. Postal Service, through the ballot track system, and being able to have immediate access to those issues is kind of a big deal for us, especially the county the size of Washoe.
Yeah, remind us of the deadlines, right? Because as it stands in Nevada law right now, as long as you're postmarked by election day, that mail ballot is counted. And is it another 7 days that it has to arrive?
Five. It has to be in. But again, if I-80's closed and they get stuck in California, those voters, that's a question we have to answer. And that's a question we've asked the Postal Service. What is your plan? What are you going to do? I don't think they understand the realities of I-80 and the significance of our weather in northern Nevada. And that's the frustrating part, is for some bureaucrat in D.C. to make a decision about our local community without really understanding the implications of how we live our lives. Again, I think this is why people have distrust in government. Government comes in, makes big decisions without understanding the reality of the situation. And thank goodness our federal delegation has stepped up. You know, our two U.S. senators have been aggressive about getting information from the Postal Service. Congressman Amade has been phenomenal in his conversations with the U.S. Postal Service. He is truly fighting hard for Nevadans to get those answers before a final decision is made.
Going back to I-80, we just did an experiment where during the last blizzard, we sent letters, one from Reno to another place in Reno, one from Reno that had to go to Sacramento and back. And that second letter took about 4 days longer. I mean, we're talking potentially, this is not that far-fetched to envision a scenario where the general election's in November, we have snowstorms in November. Obviously, with the presidential preference primary, we have snowstorms in February where some ballots potentially are butting up to that five-day deadline or maybe potentially not counted. I mean, that has to be really worrisome for you.
It is. It's scary, right? Again, my job is to ensure every eligible Nevadan has access to the ballot box and has an opportunity to have their voice heard. Anything that impedes that process or impedes that ability gives me great concern, and I'm going to stand up and I'm going to yell and scream about it and do whatever I can. You know, there are things that I think we can explore going further on the postal issues. I'm exploring those now. As a lawyer, my head is running 100 miles an hour about what opportunities or arguments can we make. Because again, Washoe County citizens and residents deserve better than a federal bureaucrat determining what's in the best interest of our community.
Do you think that if this were to go into effect, that five-day limit might have to be extended just to give more of a buffer?
We shouldn't have to adjust our norms in our state, in our community, because some federal bureaucrat has determined it's in our best interest.
Let's switch gears a little bit. This is the first election year where we're going to have election worker protections that are in place. We spoke about this a little bit when we had you in studio for a pilot episode of this show that never got to air. So let's revisit that, because it's in effect now, right? It's a felony to harass, threaten, intimidate election workers, poll workers, etc. It was signed into law by Governor Lombardo, came out of the 2023 legislature. Just how important was it for you to know that there is this extra level of security and safety for Nevada election workers?
Again, I think it's important to understand that this is not a Republican or Democratic issue. This is an issue about our community and about doing what's right. You know, the legislature came through in a bipartisan way to pass that bill unanimously out of both houses. Governor Lombardo was super supportive and signed that bill in the presence of a large group of county clerks, which sent a message, right? We are trying to do what's right. We have to understand that elections are about people. It's about the voter. It's about the candidate. And it's about the individuals who work and volunteer to be and our poll workers on election day. We need to ensure that the people process is protected. This bill gives us an opportunity to work with local law enforcement to ensure that they have an opportunity to work and do what we need them to do in a safe space. You know, that was my favorite thing about the election day and early voting, was having the opportunity to go visit polling centers and talk to poll workers and ask them why they continue to show up. And it was great because we had some new individuals who for the first time were volunteering or working as poll workers. And they explained that, you know, they felt safe enough to be able to be there given the fact that we had their backs and that we were willing to stand up for them and make sure that people understood the job they were doing was critically important to our democracy and to our fundamental right to vote. And so it was a lot of fun to talk to these individuals. We also talked to individuals who'd been there for a couple of decades working at the polling locations because they knew that the process was important and that what they were doing was giving everybody that access to the ballot box that we so much depend on as American citizens. And so that was a lot of fun, and to hear the feedback directly from the individuals we were trying to impact. And I have to say, I think things went well. I think people were pretty satisfied. You know, we helped with Washoe County in giving them some additional resources to be able to increase that security capacity. So I'm excited to see. I think hopefully we'll get all the poll workers we need across the state for the June primary. You know, that number is going to double from the presidential preferential primary. And so we are going to get to work early to try to be creative about recruiting poll workers.
Before we wrap up here, you're a big sports fan. In fact, you've been on our sports show in-house called Nevada Sportsnet. Have you made your bracket yet? Who do you have going to the Final Four for March Madness?
I have not. I've received a couple of links to fill out a bracket. Again, I am internally torn that I cannot, in good conscience at this point in time, predict who's going to be there. Again, look, obviously, growing up in Tucson, Arizona, being a lifelong Arizona Wildcat fan, going to the University of Arizona for 9 years. But Nevada is my home. Nevada is potentially going to be the underdog in that game. And I like it when an underdog wins. And so, again, this is going to be, you know, hey, we're battle born. Home means Nevada. Again, it's an idea that is, I don't think I'd ever be in this position so quickly to have to make a sports decision like this. This is a significant decision, but I'm excited.
Just don't go out and get one of those split hats. I used to tease former Governor Steve Sisolak. He had the Nevada and the UNLV split hat, and it just made me cringe every time I saw it.
No. Look, I think I know what I'm going to do. And so,
all right. Looking forward to it. Secretary of State Cisco Aguilar, thank you so much for joining us on Ballot Battleground Nevada this week. We appreciate getting some of your time.
Thank you for doing what you're doing. It's so important to educate Nevadans about our process, and we need to be as transparent so people truly understand how things work. So thank you for doing that. Appreciate it.
You bet, and come back anytime.
All right. Have a good one.
A special thanks to Secretary Aguilar for coming on the pod this week. We hope you're enjoying the show, but if you have any ideas to make it better, guest ideas, episode ideas, questions, comments, concerns, please send us an email to bjmarjot@sbgtv.com with Ballot Battleground Nevada in the subject line. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back in your feed with a new episode, hopefully when I'm a lot less congested, next Wednesday. We'll see you then.